One of the best things about a vacation is to get back home and to see familiar things and familiar faces and well-loved friends. So I'm happy to be here. I'm rejoiced in the wonderful summer that we've had, as my colleagues have led you. And I come back to begin with a series of sermons on the parable of the prodigal son. A child ran up to me after one of the services and, having seen all of these sermons announced, said to me, "Are you going to preach all of this today?" Today we begin with the sermon, The Prodigal Father. In the 15th chapter of the Gospel of Luke, on page 909, if you'd like to follow me, we pick up the story at verse 21, where the boy has come home. "And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and make merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to make merry." Let us pray silently for a moment. In Christ's name, amen. It is, I believe, the greatest story ever told. It's a story that reveals humankind in all of its need. It's a story that lays bare the heart of God. If you really want to know what God is like, look closely at the Father in this parable. It's a story of a boy who left home to find himself only to come back where he had started. It's the story of a father who loved a son enough to let him go, and then stood waiting and waiting with a welcoming embrace for the boy to come home. It's the story of a son who stayed at home to tend the family farm, to watch after the family flocks, but who never developed the capacity to love his brother or to understand what really mattered to his father. And with this story as my central theme, we shall together for the next 6 weeks look at the parable of the prodigal son together. It's a story that fills us with hope, and it gives us hope for two reasons. It's realistic. It deals with life as it is while challenging us to consider life as Christ meant it to be. Someone has said that a preacher should have a Bible in one hand and a newspaper in the other. He should get the agenda of life and seek the ideals of the scriptures and combine them in a relevant fashion to strengthen the people of God. This story is relevant and authentic and realistic. There are parents among us who have had or have a rebellious child whose one desire is to throw off the shackles of home and get away to find out whatever it is out there where there is freedom. There are young people present who are hankering, who have a hunger burning in them for the things out there that summon them. There are those among us who, like the elder brother, who nurse and harbor resentments. We have built walls around ourselves so high that we cannot reach out to love a brother who has returned destitute, repentant, and wiser from the ravages of the far country. We have nursed our resentments so long, and we cannot possibly understand the welcoming embrace of the Father. So it's a story that gives us hope because of its relevancy and its realism. It's a story that gives us hope, though, because of one word: love. The boy came home. Because in the utter shambles of his life, he remembered his father's love. It was the love of his father that summoned him home. He came home battered, but a better boy. He came home repentant and found renewal, all because his father loved him. So we begin today with a sermon on the prodigal father. You know, the word prodigal has fallen into disrepute and misuse in our way of using it. We think of it as being wasteful, of squandering one's resources, of the misappropriation of talent and capacity, and that is a possible use of the word. But there's another side to the word prodigal, and that is the meaning of the word as extreme generosity. The word prodigality really means abundant generosity, and that's how I see the father in the parable. He is a person of abundant generosity. So I call him the prodigal father, the generous father. Note with me that he was generous to both of his boys. To the younger son, he gave him what was coming to him. By law, one-third of the estate belonged to him. It was at the discretion of the father when that portion was granted. He gave it to him, probably knowing when the transaction was made that the boy would waste it and would be in want one day. But his love was big enough to embrace all of that. He loved that other boy too, who stayed at home. He shared everything with him every day. Because we are loved routinely and regularly every day does not mean that love is lessened or devalued. As a matter of fact, a case can be made that a love that sustains itself every day in all of life's ups and downs, in the ruts of the regular, is the greatest love of them all. It's like the wife who said to her shy and retiring husband, "Honey, you never tell me anymore that you love me." And he said to her, "Well, I told you 28 years ago, and if I had changed, I would tell you." Love needs to be expressed more than that. We all need affirmation, stroking. But do not disparage the love that is operative every day through good times and bad. One of the sad notes of the parable is that the older boy never knew how much his father loved him. They were together every day, and yet he never knew it. He was generous to both of his sons. Both of them were the inheritors of all that he had to give them. Watchman Nee, the great Christian, tells of a new convert who came to him by night, caught in the throes of grave doubts about his salvation. He wondered about his relationship with God, and he felt that he was moving away from God. And this is what Watchman Nee said to him. He said, "You see this dog here playing on the floor? He's my dog. He's house trained. He is very obedient. He's a pure delight to me. He never messes up anything. Out in the kitchen is my baby son. He makes a mess of everything. He throws his food around. He is loud at one end and irresponsible at the other. He is a total mess at times. But who is going to inherit my kingdom? Not my dog, but my son. He is my heir. You are the heir of Jesus Christ. It is for you that he died." That's a story worth remembering. We are the inheritors of God's grace. Both of the sons in the parable were loved by the father. They were his heirs. To one, he forgave everything. To the other, he shared everything he had every day. If you look at the parable carefully, you will note that there are three acts of grace in the parable, three acts of generosity that stand out. And I believe they have meaning for us today. Let's look at them together. The first act of generosity is he gave the younger boy his freedom and let him go. It was an act of grace and of generosity that prompted that. He could have kept him at home. He could have said, "Go if you must, but not one red dime from me." He could have placed severe restrictions on him. He didn't do any of that. He graciously and generously gave him what was coming to him and let him go. P.T. Forsyth has said that the only way to the Father is through the far country, and I think he's right. To be mature, we must finally and fully take responsibility for ourselves. And even though it saddened the father's heart, he let the boy go, knowing that he would face hardships, that he was not yet ready for freedom. All of us who are parents are protective of our children. You are, I am. We are fearful of their exercise of freedom, of the dangers and the hurts and the risk out there. It's always a risky thing to let a loved one go to experience whatever it is they must experience, but we've got to do it. Because it's only in taking responsibility for themselves that they grow to maturity. Well, what happened? Catastrophe. His money ran out. His friends left him. To his credit, he didn't wire home for money. He looked for work. And he found a job. What a job. In a pig pen. You know, growing up is hard. We often go from the pinnacle to the pit. From plenty to a pittance. And that boy found out what freedom was all about. Money gone. Environment shot. Famine in the land, we would call it a recession, jobs hard to come by, and worst of all, nobody cared. Did you notice? No one in the far country reached out to him at all. You know, the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference. And that's what he was experiencing, utter indifference. The boy had come full cycle. He was sick of home, now he was homesick. He had left with money belt full and traveler's checks ready, but now he had nothing and was homesick. You know, you must have some sense of where home is to feel lost. Bruce Lawson tells a story of a little boy who was told early one morning that the family was moving to another city. And the little lad thought immediately of the park where he had gone practically every afternoon to play with his little friends. And so he said, before we leave, I want to go down and tell all of my friends goodbye. So one day with his older sister, he went down, and there in the park said goodbye to all of his playmates. In that park was a huge statue of General Grant on a horse. And in a last gesture of farewell, the lad stood before the statue of General Grant, and he said very tearfully, "Goodbye, General Grant, and whoever that is on your back." You see, that little boy hadn't left yet. And he was already homesick. Already homesick. It's something like that. It is that is operating in the boy in the far country. He is thinking of home and the memory of his father. He acknowledges all of his wrongdoing. He's now ready to take responsibility for himself. So home he heads. It's the memory of his father that lifts him up and sends him home. You know, we have to get down sometimes before we look up. We sometimes have to be out before we know we need to be in. We sometimes have to be lost before we have a need to be found. And sometimes we have to be set free to fail, to waste, before we can treasure the inheritance that is ours. It was an act of love that let that boy go. It was the memory of the father's love that brought him back. Out in Hollywood, on the tomb of a famous actress, there is this inscription: "She did it the hard way." So did the younger boy. But the father loved him enough to let him go. High risk? Of course it is. Loving is always a risky business. One of the highlights of the summer for me was to hear a lecture by Leo Buscaglia. His recent best-selling book, Loving Each Other, I commend to you. And in that book, I ran across some thoughts entitled, "Listen." And the words are very, very helpful to me. It goes, when I ask you to listen to me and you start giving advice, you've not done what I ask. When I ask you to listen to me and you begin to tell me why I shouldn't feel that way, you're trampling on my feelings. Perhaps that's why prayer works. God is mute. He doesn't offer advice. He just listens and trusts us to work it out for ourselves. So please just listen to me and hear me. And if you want to talk, wait for a few minutes. And when it's your turn, I'll promise I'll listen to you. Sometimes you just have to listen and let them go. so that they might finally, fully take responsibility for themselves. Well, the second act of generosity is obviously when the father welcomed the boy home. It's the most beautiful picture in the Bible. I've come to it again and again in my private devotions and in my preaching because I often feel like that boy on the way home. As he trudges along practicing his speech of confession, the scene abruptly changes. You remember? He saw him afar off. Why did he see? Because he was out there looking for that boy every day. His eyes searching the horizon for that familiar profile, that recognizable stride, that carefree walk of his youngest son. He was looking for him. And having seen him, he ran to him. And the words just gush forth. Bring the best robe. Put a ring on his hand. Shoes on his feet. Kill the fatted calf. And let's make merry. It's a picture of total celebration and joy. It ought to be set to music. Let that picture etch itself into your heart. It's the clearest portrait of God in the Bible. It is a picture that beckons again and again. Three times during the year I have been out west, and I have discovered that I love the west more than I thought I would. The fiery sunsets on the desert of Arizona and New Mexico. That's pretty good for a fellow that's basically live oak trees and moss. But then the fiery sunsets of the western deserts, there is something breathtaking. And some words stirred in me 3 weeks ago when in Santa Fe, I'm glad that God takes every worn-out day and burns it up in sunset. All mistakes, the little triumphs, the futile cares are gathered into one bonfire that breaks in flame against the banks of the sky. I think he likes to see it burn and stand beside it till the last gray ashes fall, and then across the fretful thoroughfares over the troubled roofs and petty wars out of the lonely heights of the unknown. Listen, a clean wind blows, all tangled with the stars. Clean wind blows. That's what happened to that young boy when he came home. He was embraced in the clean wind of his father's love. And there are some who are here who will ask, suppose the wandering child does not come home. Hear it. The father's love is equal to that too. And then, in the midst of the joy, there is this discordant note. The other brother, out in the field, the weariness of the day's work upon his shoulder, heard all of the noise of the merrymaking. He approached the house. A servant caught up in the joy rushes out and says, "Your brother is back." I wish that elder brother wasn't in the parable. He was angry and would not go in. And that brings me to the third act of generosity. The father reminds the elder brother of the relationship they had every day. You know, the elder brother was saying, it isn't fair. The father was saying, my love for you isn't lessened because everything I have is yours. It was literally true by law. When he would not come in, the record says that the father went out and begged him to come in, and there is no hint that he ever went in. The father had assumed all of these years that the boy had stayed home because they were close. The dawning reality emerging in the parable is that he had stayed home not because he loved his father or loved his work, but because of what he expected to come to him out of the relationship. You know, love is something you can take for granted in the closest of family relationships. You can assume one thing when the reality is another. You can expect one response and get the opposite. How many times have I had people sitting in my study and one would say, I need so-and-so, and the other, living together for 10 years and married, would say, I didn't know that. It's hard every day to love. Virginia Stair, in some rather descriptive words, says the movement of love is like this: to love without clutching, to appreciate without judging, to join you without invading, to invite you without demanding, to leave you without guilt, to criticize without blaming, to help without insulting. And if I can have the same from you, we can meet and enrich one another. You know, the father thought he had all of that with that older boy. So imagine how shocked he was. The hardest relationships that we have to sustain are those relationships that occur every day. The persons you spend every day with, your wife, your husband, your children, every morning they wake up, those bundles of joy. You get them ready to school, you carpool them, you go to work, you come home all day long, every day. It's the dailiness of life that is the challenge to us all. The persons who have a marriage that endures as well as endures are persons who work at it every day. And if you don't, the ruts of routine grow deeper and deeper, and the machinery of love is clogged up by the dust of dailiness. You have to work at it every day. A man walked out with his wife one morning, and they stood on the stoop in front of their house, and across the street the neighbor was there warmly kissing his wife goodbye before he headed off to work. His wife turned to him and said, "Why don't you do that sometime?" He said, "I hardly know her." You can't take anything for granted, you see. Charles Dickens wrote The Tale of Two Cities, and he said it was the best of times and the worst of times. Luke, in his gospel, records the tale of two boys. Both of them broke their father's heart. One was willful and estranged himself. The other was selfish and unforgiving, and stood in anger outside of his father's house. The only thing available to both of them was their father's love. One was embraced by it and received it. The other rejected it. So I would say to you today, don't take your father's love for granted. One of the treasured memories of my heart is that I did not neglect my parents. My mother died when I was a college sophomore. A loving and gracious woman of compassion, she conditioned me, I think, to love people. My father lived to be 85. During the last years of his life, I called him frequently. I wrote him at least once a week. He received the printed sermons and the cassette tapes of my sermons. I remember one day I called him and I said, "Are you reading all those sermons?" He said, "They come regular." Thank God he didn't say to me what Brooks Hayes' father said to him when Congressman Hayes said to his daddy, "Have you read my last book?" He said, "I hope so." And I remember the first time I visited the old house in which I was reared after my father's death. Vicki and Susie were with me. I walked over the farm, memories I flooded with experiences of yesterday, scenes of childhood intensely before me. Then we walked up to the front door, and the key was in the familiar place, and went in, the furniture, most of it still there. My father's old hat on the end of the sofa, his farm coat draped over the chair. It was one of the most wrenching moments of my life. No word of joyous greeting, no embrace of gladness. My father was not there. Don't take the love of father for granted. I stood before the open grave of a dear friend of 25 years this week, dead at age 53, her husband said to me again and again, "I thought we would have more time." Don't take the father's love for granted. The father had two sons. Both of them were lost. One of them stayed at home. But note this, when the boy came back, there was celebration. Joy is the characteristic note of the Christian faith. Christianity is the most encouraging, the most joyous, the least repressive. of all of the great religions of mankind. While it has its sorrows and disciplines, the end of it is a resurrection, not a burial, a festival, not a funeral. Joy. Joy. Don't take the Father's love for granted. A little boy named Philip disobeyed his dad and was punished and sent up to his attic bedroom to spend the night. That's where he always slept. Many children in the family. They had a very small house. 10 o'clock came, then 11, and the stroke of midnight. Little Philip was wide awake and angry in the attic where he was to spend the night in his little bed. His father downstairs was wide awake. He could not sleep either. He knew that he must teach the boy that wrong must be punished. But there was another side of that father. So in the dead of night, he climbed the stairs to the attic room. Gently knocking on the door, he climbed in the other side of the little bed and said, "My son, you did something wrong. But that is not all. I have come to spend the night with you here." Both were soon asleep, snuggled close to one another. That's the picture. That's the picture I want you to have in your heart of the prodigal father, whose love was abundantly lavish. Hope of the world afoot on dusty highways, showing to wandering souls the path of light. Walk thou beside us, lest the tempting byways lure us away from thee to endless night. We give thanks, our Father, for these moments together. We ask your blessings upon us now as we depart to respond to the lavish love of a loving Father whose name is spelled G-O-D, God.